I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Good day, Todd Bettis from Utah State University Extension and the KSL Greenhouse Show. I've been receiving a lot of calls and emails and social media hits about natural herbicides or natural weed killers over the last month or so, and I thought it would be appropriate to put together a short podcast on why they're so popular as compared to other things, and maybe some alternatives to herbicides altogether. And so when I float around on social media, on Facebook or Pinterest, I continually run into natural herbicide, you know, natural weed killer. You know, all the ingredients are in your kitchen. Don't waste your money. And so these herbicides that you would concoct yourself oftentimes have things like table salt and vinegar and borax or Epsom salts. And then a lot of times they are dosed up with dish detergent to make them more effective. And I wanted to talk about some of these individual ingredients and what they actually, you know, might do. Even though we consume them, that doesn't mean that they are optimal for use out in the garden. So right now, the most popular mix I'm seeing is one containing vinegar and table salt and a few drops to a quarter of a cup of dish detergent, such as Dawn or Joy. And people will mix this up in some water and then go out and spray their weeds. Now, what this does, because of the salt and vinegar, is it causes the weeds' leaves to desiccate or to wilt or burn down. It's chemically burning them. And it only kills the top of the weed as compared to being systemic and having something get down into the roots. Now, some other substitutions for table salt I've seen are borax and sometimes Epsom salts, but the reason I'm very concerned about this is that you have to use salt. And, you know, Utah has a lot of clay soil. And when you spray salt onto the soil, you know, going out once a year with just a little bit of a mist probably isn't going to hurt anything. But if you continually do that on a week-to-week basis, over time, you could get a buildup of sodium chloride, or borax has a lot of sodium in it, and sodium especially is something you do not want accumulating in your soil because it is very difficult to get rid of. Now, the vinegar portion of this sounds fine too. You know, if we eat it on salads, why can't we spray it on weeds? You know, we can ingest it. But there's research out there showing that both table salt and vinegar, as compared to glyphosate or the active ingredient in Roundup and other weed killers, are actually more toxic than actual glyphosate. Now, I'm not talking to anyone that they should chug a whole, you know, jar full of concentrated Roundup. Don't do that. There's lots of other stuff in there. But the glyphosate everyone is afraid of is actually less toxic acutely than both table salt and vinegar. But if you're doing this for a safety concern, you're actually acutely more at risk using table salt and vinegar than you are a glyphosate product. Now, a lot of people are afraid of Roundup especially, and its knockoffs such as Kills-All, and there's several others out there, because the media is always running with stories such as glyphosate causes cancer. We see lawsuits happening. You know, we see news reports all over the place. And the problem with this is that the media loves to run with something that is shocking and has potential for viewers or listeners. And so anytime you talk about the most widely used herbicide in the world and say cancer, then, you know, people's ears perk up and they become scared. And even though there is research out there showing that in certain circumstances, doses of glyphosate that are way above recommended levels can over time increase the likelihood for certain types of cancer that is out there, admittedly. And there's research showing that if you're going to be concerned about glyphosate, there's lots of other things the news doesn't talk about that maybe should be on our radar. One thing is that glyphosate potentially can fool with our digestive systems with amino acid synthesis. And there's been a lot of things with the increase of glyphosate use and GMO food, which I consume GMOs, admittedly. And so I think that there might be some concern there, and maybe we need to take a look at that, especially as more research comes out. But the point here is you as a homeowner applying Roundup in your yard once or twice a year, especially in areas that are not your vegetable garden, poses very little risk, especially if you follow the label. You know, you don't want to be out applying in a pair of shorts with no shirt on and flip-flops, or a sundress and flip-flops. That's completely off-label and you risk exposing yourself. But as long as you follow the safety guidelines on the product, you should be safe using Roundup or a similar product very occasionally. I always feel a little bit like icky after I get done talking about herbicides, and I wanted to talk about a few ways to control weeds without herbicides. And the first one is just good, honest management in your garden and in your lawn, especially as a way to avoid weeds coming in. If you keep the weeds down in your garden, even if you have bindweed and some of these other hard to control weeds, you can cultivate them regularly, and that will sap some of their energy out and prevent them from producing seeds and the runners from spreading. And so cultivation in garden areas, and even sometimes in lawns for things such as dandelions, to where you're just going out there with a screwdriver and popping them out of the ground, is a great way to control them. Now, some other methods, covering or mulching, using bark mulch and grass clippings in areas like your vegetable garden are great. You know, 3 inches of either grass clippings, and I should say here, make sure that if you have applied a lawn weed killer to your lawn, that you follow the label on when you can put those clippings in your garden. If nothing's been applied, you're fine. But grass clippings and bark mulch are both great ways to control most weeds in your garden. I really like them, and I actually use grass clippings in mine all of the time. Now, another method of covering for gardens are called plastic mulches. If you've ever seen anybody garden with black mulch and they have the plants coming up through with drip irrigation underneath, that's also another really good method. Now, in our lawns, some other things that we can do are avoid mowing the lawn too short. The lawn should be mowed at about 3 inches and fertilized more according to use. If you have a lot of kids playing on your lawns, you're throwing a lot of garden parties, then by all means, fertilize more often. But if the only time your lawn sees traffic is when it's mowed, one or two fertilizations a year is often just fine. If you manage your fertilization well and your mowing height and also your irrigation, that lawn will be so healthy that very few weeds can actually poke through it and compete with the lawn. Now, the final weed control method I want to talk about is flaming, or using a weed torch to burn down weeds. This one, admittedly, is very fun, but you really need to be careful with what you're doing because it's easy to start things on fire. Just the other day, I was driving around in southern Utah County, and I passed a barn and a fence along the side of a road that a guy had been burning weeds, and the side of the barn and the fence had burned. And I have experience after experience with this, and so if you're going to be using flaming, make sure that you're using that flame torch in an area that it is going to be safe. You don't want bark mulch or grass clippings around. You don't want to be using it on the side of your house where you're going to melt your siding. You don't want to be using it on ditch banks where there's a lot of dry weeds. That is the reason that farmers mainly burn their ditches in the spring, is because things are more moist and actively growing and you have less potential for fire. So those are some options you can use besides a spray, whether it's natural, home remedy, or purchased off of a shelf. But I wanted to address some of the concerns about these natural remedies. And the final thing I want to say about them is oftentimes they're not tested. And what happens if the dish soap company changes its formulation and all of the sudden that formulation becomes toxic to plants? And so these are things that we can't really control for. And so Utah State University always recommends commercial products, whether they be organic or just what we'd call a standard herbicide. But I would encourage you, if you want to use reduced risk herbicides, to hit up your garden centers and find things that have been labeled. There are many out there, and be safe. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great day.
The Green Thumb is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this and past episodes on our website, upr.org.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas,
in the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.